Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin, increasing and reaching your child's full potential. Each week, our objective is to help you as a parent, guardian, or loved one direct the path of a young person by empowering you with knowledge and understanding. Each week, you will be enlightened and moved into a position of positive parental involvement and influence. I am Phyllis Austin, and I am the founder of the National Parent Education Center, where we educate parents on education, help parents create quality education for their child, and advocate with parents on educational issues. Okay, and welcome to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin, maximizing your child's greatest potential. It's a cold day in Atlanta. Today, we are going to open the vault and talk about our involvement from bullying to RTI, from Arkansas to South Carolina. There are several lessons that I want to, that is going to be embedded in today's show. Often, we have similar issues, but we have to approach them differently, so you will learn about different strategies to use. Also, we're going to show how involved we are in the community and making sure your child is in a safe learning environment that meets your child's educational needs at the highest level of quality education that can be created and implemented. If you ever have a problem, I really want you to understand that you can call us. Feel free to call in. Our call-in number is 347-855-8603. Again, that's 347-855-8603. We'd love to hear from you. The first four scenarios or cases that I want to open up kind of revolved around failures. When a child fails, what can be done this time of year? Parents will start to see that the child may not be successful. So I want to talk about four cases to kind of give you an understanding of the different strategies that we use. First case involved a fourth grade student, and this was toward the end of the school year. And this was really when we didn't have a website. The parent actually knew me. The child went to the same school that my daughter went to. And a parent came and said, you know, she called me up one morning and she said, my child has failed. And she was, for the most part, pretty involved. This occurred in Atlanta Public Schools. In some cases, I would give the name of the school district. And she said, my child has failed. What do I do? She has some information. And it was amazing that a young kid, a child of fourth grade, could actually fail with no real intervention. So I kind of asked her some questions about the child's learning style and multiple intelligence. Learning style is how you take in information, just like you type on the keyboard to take information to a computer. Or you scan in a picture, or you use a microphone. But the learning style is how the child, for the most part, prefers to receive information. Multiple intelligence is the tendency to process information. Now, when you talk about fourth grade students, most of the time, sometimes parents kind of pick up on what these things are. Sometimes they don't. But I told her, I said, well, I know the principal, pretty good guy. I want you to go to the principal. I want you to mention two words. And the two words that I told her to mention to the principal is differentiated instruction. And she called me back and she said, wow, those two words really made a difference. Basically what occurred was the teacher had to reteach the child, differentiate the instruction, learn and tune into more about what the child's learning style is, how the child tended to process information. So it wasn't with us. We were concerned about the child learning, not just about the child passing. Learning is you position the child better to be successful in life. So I felt that this was a case of the teacher being inexperienced on learning styles and really knowing how to differentiate the instruction. But the child, that was the strategy we used, and the child was retaught. Actually, almost in like a little isolated private scenario, so it's pretty great. Another case was referred to us by a client. I asked the client, I said, how did you get to us? Well, it was referred by another client who had, we had helped, and they were actually talking at a beauty salon, come to find out. And this was a middle school pair. It occurred right before winter break. The parent called me up, and she said, we had our office in Atlantic Station at that time, and she called me. She said her child failed. She didn't know why, and she said something kind of bizarre. She said the teacher literally takes points off of her child's work, and there's no reason for it. I could not believe it. So I asked the parent to meet me over at the office, and the parent came with a lot of information. It was a lot of good documentation. And it looked like the teacher was penalizing the child academically for unknown reasons. I mean, usually you see where in the data you can kind of read where there's maybe a disciplinary issue, and the teacher's kind of penalizing the child because the child's maybe talking out or anything, but there was no record. This was in Gwinnett County, Georgia. By the way, this case in the middle school is Gwinnett County, Georgia. Well, we went through the case, and I asked the school, wrote a letter, asked the school for tier two process, and they sent over something, but it wasn't tier two. A lot of people don't know, a lot of school districts across the country don't know RTI, especially teachers don't understand that they have to move into the tier two process. But what ended up occurring in this particular case, that was our argument based on RTI, and the child had to be retaught. I really like RTI in this case because it allowed for more data to be documented, to really monitor how that child was going to be taught. Didn't have a lot of trust for the teacher, the school district, or the principal. So we definitely wanted the data. We definitely wanted the mother to be involved. And in this case, it was a step-by-step process. Just to let you know, you're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin, and we're opening our vault today discussing cases and our involvement in cases. And right now we're talking about some of the cases that we had that revolved around failure and how each one looked different. The strategies was different. Chicago case, Shoup Elementary School. I think it's Shoup, Shump, or something, whatever. It's on the south side. Parent came to me. I was actually in town. My sister is probably a great cheerleader, other than another, some of the clients who we have. Phyllis. She knows. So you're in Chicago. I was in Chicago at a family event, and this basically someone called me on the phone and said, do you work in Chicago? I said, well, I guess I do now. And that's when we was known as the Parent Center. We was known as Parent Education Center. And after this case, that's when we started calling ourselves the National Parent Education Center, by the way, when we picked up this first Chicago case. The child was failing. We went in there. We asked for tier two. The school didn't know. And that was kind of normal, the school, the principal, the teacher. That's trust me, that happens across the United States. Most school districts, most principals, most teachers don't know about RTI. But what astonished us was that no one in the district office seemed to know about RTI. So we were actually web conferencing between a parent and top district personnel officials. It was kind of funny on my end to discuss things with the district office. And at one time, when the parent met with the district leaders, she said, when we got so far advanced in the case, and it took about 3 weeks. The parent said, how long is this going to take? I said, well, if they don't know anything, it's going to take about 3 weeks. If they know something, we can wrap it up in about two. But it went the fullest in 3 weeks. And that's just something I like to do to see, can I put a time limit on these cases? But in one meeting, she she went in. She said, you know, it was at the local, at the school with the principal. She said they had a district attorney in there. And I said, well, they just think you're going to sue the school and think they're going to make habit. Our goal is to do what's in the best interest of the child. To make a long story short, the lack of knowledge about RIT, we kept saying we wanted the child moved to Tier 2. And, you know, something clicked to say, Phyllis, they don't know what Tier 2 is. They have no clue of how to implement it. They kept talking about testing, going to an IEP. So the night before, and luckily a friend of my sister's called and said, well, I can be in that meeting with her, with the client. We said, great, in Chicago, which was great because she was learning about education. She was getting into education. I said, great. She went in the meeting. Well, I told her before, it was a Sunday evening. I said, look, I don't think they have a clue about the Tier 2 process, RTI process. And more than likely, when you get in that meeting, they are going to start talking about testing and IEP. And if they do that, let's have everything that we want, strategies that we want to be entered in that process, because the child had been tested before. So they went with the child's test from before. And that morning when they went in, we just, what I call, flooded the IEP with everything that we wanted, tutorial and everything. Everybody was happy. I was laughing when they told me what occurred at the meeting. It was the funniest thing, but this was a case where we just decided to flood the IEP with everything because the district didn't know, and they knew that we basically knew what was going on because we were educating them about the whole process. So that was funny. The last failure case that I want to speak with you about, I met this parent at a PTSA meeting. So PTSAs, if you're out there, feel free to call me. She actually brought my book from Parent of Power. It might have been the original. No, I think it was from Parent of Power because the original name was Parents, the Power Behind Your Child's Success. And several months later, she called me. It was a DeKalb County High School case, special needs. The sophomore, I believe her son was a sophomore, he failed a social science course. I don't know, it was some social study. I call it social studies back in the day. Now it's called social science. The parent did everything she was supposed to do. This was a case where the regular teacher was out, I believe, on maternity leave. They had a substitute, and the substitute teacher really wasn't qualified to be long-term. So there was really no knowledge of the subject. And I think the substitute was doing the best she could, but the school wasn't. There was great communication on the part of the parent, asking what she could do. Of course, the parent read my book, so she knew how to initiate that communication. It's really great. Buy that book from Parent of Power. To make a long story short, when we got involved, the one thing we had to figure out was if this was an EOCT course. Georgia was just transitioning from the Georgia High School graduation test to EOCT in the course test. And we had to figure out, was this the end of the course test? And the parent came to us. I said, well, this is where we are with this case. Your child failed the course. We have some options here. One, we can go strictly for a grade change, or we can go to reteach. If this is the end of the course test, we need to go for reteaching. Remove the grade, whatever grade the child will earn. After being retaught the subject, it will replace the F grade, so that will never show up on the transcript. But if this is not an EOCT course, we're just going to go for the grade change. Your child is in high school, the social studies, he doesn't even want to go into this field where he's going to know about this, where he's going to have to use this information more than likely. Yeah, so let's just move on with life. Well, come to find out, it was not an EOCT case. So when we asked for the grade change at the local level, we put it in writing, we had the data and everything, because it really should implement an RTI, Tier 2, but we weren't thinking about Tier 2 at this time. This was just, let's get this grade changed and move on with life, okay? The local people at the administrators at the school made such a big, they made this profound statement, like, we don't know if the grade could be changed. And I had told the parent, this grade is getting changed within a New York minute once it hits the district office. Needless to say, the grade was changed, and everybody was happy, and the kid went on with life, okay? You're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. Feel free to call in. Our call-in number is 347-855-8603, and we are opening the vault, discussing cases that we have had as an organization to give you an idea of what can be done. We'll go to a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Phyllis Austin, founder of the National Parent Education Center. When I first started this organization, I wanted to make sure that parents understood what a quality education is and what it looks like. Do you know that most state constitutions only provide for an adequate education? Here at the National Parent Education Center, we help parents create and receive a quality education for their child. Please support our efforts by making a $5 donation. You may donate more, but please donate. Visit TNPEC.org and donate now. Thank you.
Okay, welcome back to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin, and we're talking about our involvement from bullying to RTI, Arkansas to South Carolina. And we just really want the community to know how we are involved in helping parents and students create and receive the highest level of quality education that meets the student's educational needs. Let's take a look at correct educational environments. Usually there are times when you just need to move the child out of the local school, okay, for a variety of reasons, but more importantly, to prevent what we call regress to the mean. Usually the population that's being served in the school, the skill level of that population is much lower than the student, our client. And we feel that there's enough data, statistical information to show that if this child stayed in that population, they will regress. So this is nothing new to me. Being raised in Chicago operate on this practice, especially for high school, to make sure that the child had a variety of options. Again, I went to Limblom where I had to take a test to get in the school because the general school was probably just a little bit beneath my skill level, all I lost, and I needed to be placed in the right school. So that's nothing new. Before North Child Left Behind, Common Core and all that, this is kind of like the traditional argument. A parent will go to the district office. I did it for my son. I went to the district office in DeKalb County, and I said, hey, this is where the school is based on normal reference test scores. You want to look at normal reference test, not criterion reference. Do not use criterion reference test scores, okay? And there's a show that talks about the difference between the two. This is where my son is. This is the school in our area, and you see the gap. He goes in there, he's going to regress. Better yet, this is what he wants to do. These are the type of programs that are being offered. So let's do this in the best interest of the child. Child gets moved. Okay? Textbook. Back in the day, this was a common practice if the parent made a good argument. And you went on with life. I want to talk about one that happened in Henry County, which was, of course, what I just outlined. The population, a person came to us, the client being served, well, the student was just above what the what was being offered in the school. And so the superintendent, remember I said this is textbook. So the assistant superintendent or the superintendent did what they supposed to have done. They called the parents and said, what do you want? And I told the parent, they're going to call and ask you what you want. And the parent got off track. They said, well, I just think the kids are not being served and I want better education. And later on when the parent called me, I said, that's not what we discussed. I said, the data shows that the school is serving the population, okay? Meaning the child, meaning their educational needs. Your child just happened to be above. Make a long story short, the child was moved. Textbook. Now, under No Child Left Behind, Bush made the argument much easier, okay, for a child to be moved out of a school that wasn't being adequate yearly progress. But then that was according to criteria reference. So under Bush, No Child Left Behind, if a school didn't meet adequate yearly progress, excuse me, the school, I said child, the school didn't meet adequate yearly progress, the child could basically opt out of that school. Now, we get the child out under No Child Left Behind, but getting a child into the right school, we used ITBS scores to make that argument. But once a child is out of the school under federal law, it's very easy to get a child into the school if you make the right argument, because the system set up schools that the children can go to if they opt out. Sometimes the school was on the list, sometimes they weren't. If they weren't, we make an argument to get into another school that met the child's educational needs. Very easy to do under No Child Left Behind, had a lot of cases. Under Bush, we actually came to a civil rights case in DeKalb County, in which we had to file a civil rights violation because the only middle school in the district that had an IB program at the time was Shamrock Middle School. We felt that the child had orchestra, was taking orchestra, and the school's own didn't have orchestra. They had band, the child taking violin. So not only were we talking about academic, we were talking about extracurriculum, in which music is tied to increasing the academic performance of a child. So we had some very good data and argument there. But we had to file a case because DeKalb County, this was the only school that had the middle school IB program, the NYP program, and DeKalb County based interest on this program, they favor kids in the school zone. Well, you can't do that. Okay? If it's the only program, you got to have equal educational access, opportunity to access the program. They weren't yielding. We filed a suit. This was Bush's No Child Left Behind. We had the child out of the home school. Now we have to get the child in. We filed a federal lawsuit with DOE. We went to the state, we appealed, but we went to the governor. And at that time, Governor Perdue, Perdue was the governor in office, and with his, he weighed in on the matter, and the child was placed in the correct educational setting. Actually, wasn't placed in that educational setting because that didn't change until the civil rights violation was completed. DeKalb County never admitted wrong, but they put the school in the lottery system as a part of school choice. So they didn't admit it, but they changed it, and that was due to our influence and our case filing there. And people don't know that, but the child, the state and the governor weighed in, and it was a done deal. Okay, so the child would not regress. Another case, which was more complicated, was when Obama waived the part of No Child Left Behind, which allowed students to transfer out of schools that didn't meet AYP. And this was heartbreaking because the first year that this waiver was given to the state of Georgia, we told parents that we don't know what's going to happen. But the first year of the four cases that came at the beginning of the year, three of the families basically experienced what we call a backdoor tax to get quality education. No one was yielding. We took the case to the state. We took the case, these cases, to Governor Neal. We took the cases to Arnie Duncan's office in the Department of Education. We filed appeals. Nothing was done. And it was heart-wrenching because Obama's position was we're going to better the quality of education in schools, which he really is doing. However, just because you're bettering the quality of education in the school doesn't mean that students aren't stuck in educational settings where the level of education being delivered is beneath them. And statistically, if they stay in that environment, they will regress. And that was the part Arne Duncan and the Obama administration didn't get. And so of the three out of four families that came to us this year, the first year that they accepted the Common Core RT3 race to the top, these parents ended up paying a backdoor tax, and basically what that means, in order to access quality education, they basically rented apartments in these school zones. And to me, that took me back to the era of before there was any No Child Left Behind. Well, you were relegated to attending school in your school zone. So, you know, that tells you something about federal government's involvement in education. And I did a whole show on Bush and Obama's educational policies, so I'm not going to go into detail here. Pros and cons to both, okay? You can listen to that show, that podcast. Okay. You're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin, and we're opening the vault. Just want to make an announcement. We will expand our services. We have something amazing that the National Parent Education Center will do in the next couple of months, and it will be really groundbreaking. I don't believe it's being done anyplace else in the world, okay? But we're going to be the first to do it, and just stay tuned. Again, you're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. Please feel free to call in. Our call-in number is 347-855-8603. Also, you can join us online by chat. So we're going to take another commercial break, and we will be right back to talk about bullying, cyberbullying, harassment, custody, third party. I'm going to try to just give you try to give you an idea of everything that we do here so you can support us. Okay? Let's go to a commercial break.
Hi, I'm Phyllis Austin. You know, parenting is very difficult. I don't know too many parents who can raise a child to 18 years of age without getting stuck, not knowing what to do. So I would like you to visit householddna.com and view the Household DNA Parenting Pyramid. Learn about the 7 principles of parenting, 4 of which you should be actively doing every day. Next, visit phyllisaustin.com and click on the Power Bookstore for great parent resources. You can pick up my latest book, God Has Not Forgotten You, written for teenagers and college students. While there, get your copy of my ever-popular book, From Parent to Power, Don't Parent in Fear. This is Austin, PhyllisAustin.com today for your book and parent resources. Thank you.
Hi, welcome back to Class with DNA with Phyllis Austin. And yes, we're going to go over this 30-minute mark, okay? We might even get to our old shows used to be like an hour format. Who knows? We might even get there today. But I think this is very important to open the vault to help parents understand the complexity and what it takes to get a quality education. And when we left off, we talked about that backdoor tax when you don't live in a school zone where there's quality education and you're on an antiquated system where you're relegated to those schools, and federal law is just not there. It is really heart-wrenching. Let's go into bullying. First thing, when there's bullying, tell your children, do not leave or go anywhere. Matter of fact, attach to an adult figure, school adult figure, when you're afraid that you're going to get beat up or bullied. That's bottom line. Call your parents. Don't leave. And I want to make that clear after doing a show called Shattered Dreams. with Bobby B, and I invite you to go listen to that show, because it's one thing to have long-term bullying where this is, your child can come home and still be alive. And there's another case where there's just one incident that basically relegates your child to a hospital room and they're fighting for their life. Okay. But bullying is very serious. I don't play with bullying. Immediate documentation. Get the documentation, let the school know what's going on, and then we just have to make a decision whether to even send your child back to that school. Talk about a case of bullying. It occurred the first week of a child of a new school year. Amazing. The parent didn't even want the child to go to the school. The parent said, I don't want my child to go to that school. And I said, well, that's what you want. The educational needs doesn't say that. And I said, just let me know what's going on, because something may arise in which we can get the child out of school. And the child went in to the child went to the school. Within the first week, the child was bullied. Within 7 days or 5 school days, we had the child in another school. We got the child out based on bullying. We got the child into the school that we wanted based on Norm Reference test scores, ITBS test scores. We said, this is the school that we want. They were offering something else. We said, no. The parent was asking me, how are you selecting these schools? I said, based on the ITBS test scores. Okay? And basically with that encounter, it started off with verbal. We documented, told the school. We gave them, we don't wait here at the National Parent Education Center. Literally, when we say by the end of close of business day today, that's when we want the information. And in the bullying case, we're talking about just a matter of hours. When I find out about a case, we want to resolve immediately. So the child, by the third day, the child was not going back to that school. By the fourth and fifth day, the child was in another school. Let's just knock that out of the box. Okay? High school bullying case. We didn't want the child. This was one of the ones in which we couldn't move the child out under Obama. He waived it, but we got the child into a halfway decent school because of bullying. Oh, well, this was it was really because of the educational environment in the school was so bad. The talking and just the teacher's ability and the school's ability, administrator's ability to manage the school where kids can learn, it was so bad. And then it was a bullying incident that came into play where we got the kid out of school into a better educational environment, but it really didn't meet the child's educational needs. And from there, of course, the parent had to pay to move into the right school zone, pay for an apartment. Cyberbullying case that came across my desk a couple weeks ago. the administrators were going to sit on this case. The parent did a phenomenal job of taking a screenshot of what was going on. So once you have a screenshot and a comment, it pretty much seals the deal. And the school system wouldn't say we need to investigate. No, you don't need to investigate. By the time it got to me, the parent wrote a letter, called me, and said, I want you to read. I just sent you over the email. This was a parent who had been with us several years now, a very long time. I'm part of our organization. She actually joined the board. I think I wrote like 2 sentences. I forwarded her letter was so good. She had really grown in how to construct letters for me. And I just remember writing at the top of the letter, this matter needs to be resolved immediately, period. Sent it to the principal, CC the superintendent. It was a done deal, okay? And so far, we have not heard any problems with that kid being suspended. Senior, we can take it to the full extent. Go for it. We can go for a lot of things are still open to us if anything happens. Child wanted to apologize. Great, but it was a done deal, okay? You are listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. We are opening our vault. We're talking about cases that we have been involved in. And feel free to call in. Our call-in number is 347-855-8603. Again, 347-855-8603. brief. Harris, this next case is, well, what can I say? This goes against everything that we do in education. Parent called me, and the mother, the grandmother of the children involved, and they said, we got your name. I don't know how they got my name or the organization's name, but it was a great thing they got our name. And we met with them. I met with them at the library. And I remember reading just mountains of documentation. And while I was sitting there reading the documentation, I would look up and say, are you kidding me? And I kept reading. And the more I read about what was happening to two of the three children who attended this school, the more and more I think I said to myself, I'm going to get them. Okay? It was just, this administration is probably the worst administration I came across. But I remember reading the documentation, and what it amounted to was harassment by the administrators. Okay? Not bullying, but bullying slash harassment on the part of administrators towards two of the three students. The case was so horrific. Okay, I have my pen over my mouth. Hopefully you heard that. The case was so horrific that normally a consultation takes about 30 minutes to consult with me to tell me what's going on. I think we were in that consultation for over an hour, nearly 2 hours. I think we started at 3 and the library was closed at 5 or something like that. By the end of the meeting, the grandmother and the mother said, what do we do? I said, keep your children at home. They had already tried to reach their school board member to discuss the case, and it was just kicked back and forth. I said, don't send them to school tomorrow. I wrote a letter, and this is the first time that I did not go, I think I CC'd the principal, but the letter that we wrote as an organization, very data filled, and that's what we do best. We do research, and when we put something in writing, it's based on data, research, and violations. We list the background, which is data-oriented, data flooded in the letter, okay, just data. We talk about the situation. We talk about the violations, federal, state, local, and ethical violations. And then we talk about the resolution. In this case, I sent the letter, which was, it was an 11-page letter that was written within 24 hours. The children were at home. I sent the letter to every board member, the superintendent, and CC the principal, okay? We did not go to the principal of the school for them to give us any information on what I looked at in the documentation, because the documentation had the school's name that was written by someone in the administration. We went straight to the board members. And on the letter, it said that these students would not be returning to school until you can assure us that they would be in a safe learning environment. We listed violations, and one of the kids with special needs, and it was an 11-page letter that was typed out. And normally, we do charge for every 2 pages, but this one, after 2 pages, this was a blessing for me, for them, because I wanted to nail them. I was so upset with what they have done to these kids, these children. Within 24 hours, the board member called, and I tell parents all the time, I say, you're going to get what you want, because they don't want to deal with us. And I said, you're going to have to make a decision. Do you want to get the A's and everything? Because that's what they're going to give you. You must remember that our organization started because someone gave my child an A that he did not deserve, did not earn, and his skill level stated he did not deserve it. he's a good kid. He deserved it because he's a fantastic kid. But his skill levels said that's not what he should have gotten. And I told the parent, I tell parents, they're going to call you. They'll call you in the morning. They're going to offer you all this stuff. But this was a call I never expected. When they called, they made it personal. They said, we will say you do not have to talk or work with Phyllis Austin. You can work directly with us. I never heard that before. Normally I hear that you don't have to work with an organization. But they made it very clear she did not want us to work with them. And I said, what they are doing is separating you from your power base because I know exactly what to do. We got a lot of things accomplished. It was towards the end of the year, maybe about April or probably March or April when this case came to us. And the parent have been involved in this situation for probably since the beginning of that school year. So we finished out the school year. We got a lot of things initiated where the children were receiving quality education. More importantly, it was over. Those administrators probably would never look at those kids. I wanted the kids out of the school. However, because of the resources, if a problem arises or tutorial needs needed to be granted or the kids need tutorial, the parents didn't have the resource to have the child out of the school zone. But we put everything in place, and I did tell the parents they want to start the next year off right. Let's make sure that we have things still in place. That didn't occur. They didn't get in touch with us the next year. But that stopped that harassment case. And that, for those advocates out there, just sometimes you can't deal with the principal in the school. You have to go straight to the people who have a lot of the power, in this case, the board members, because they hold the superintendent's job in their hands. Board members, superintendent, CC, the principal, and this, I love the way that letter turned out, what it needed to be done. And we made sure that within that letter, we talked about the IEPs, what the kids, the services, and everything. So they said a lot. That was a 14-page letter written within 24 hours. Just remind the audience, you're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin, and we're talking about cases that we have been involved in. Please feel free to contact us if you have any information or need any assistance or guidance on what's going on in your child's educational life. Okay? Falsely accused, yes. We had a falsely accused case. A kid was falsely accused of stealing. Occurred in a locker room. There were four boys in the locker room, if I remember this case correctly. Three of them went into a child's locker. The fourth child just happened to be in the locker room. All four was black. The locker that they went into was a white student. And I applaud the white student's parents, file criminal cases, because if there's any, I'm for my child needs to be in a safe learning environment, file the case, okay? And whenever you have a case like this, you have criminal and you have educational. So there's an educational side, there's a criminal side. There's a criminal side because there was a theft involved. They went into a locker. They stole. Somebody did it, okay? There's the academic side. The person who came to us was a friend of mine. Her child was the one who just happened to walk into the locker room. Not when this was being done. He had no knowledge of it, but he happened to walk into the locker room to change. And the next thing she knew, she was getting a phone call saying your child was involved in a theft breaking into a locker. And she called me. She said, Phyllis, they said that he did not, the boy said that he did not do it. And I said, well, get statements. Get statements that he didn't do it. Immediately get the statements. So she, I don't know if it was that day or the next day. I can't remember the timeline of this case. It was within a couple of days. They got statements. She did get the statements from the boys. And I'm trying to think, was there a citation involved where they had to go to court? I think she did get a citation. I said, well, does it have a court date on it? She said, no. I said, well, you're going to court. And she said, but there's no court no court date. I said, I understand, but you're going to court. I don't know when it's going to come, but there will be a court date. And she kind of like, Phyllis, do you really know what you're talking about? She pushed it to the side. The school year ended. She put the statement from the other boy saying that he wasn't involved into a folder, and she got a call during the summer. I never forget it, because she called me. She said, I am down at the juvenile court. They called me and said, I missed a court case date, and they said, your child is scheduled to be in court this morning. Someone called her, juvenile justice system. And I said, I'm on my way, Fulton County Court. Went down there. They were trying to hem this kid up. But the beauty of this case was the witness statements. She held on those witness statements for about three months. I'm going to exaggerate. She held on those witness statements for about a year. But no, in all honesty, about 2 or 3 months. And when I got down there, I just looked. She said, you told me it was going to be a court case. I said, I sure did tell you it was going to be a court case. Went in there, broke out my card. Here, gave him my card. This is who I am. She has witness statements saying that he was not involved. How come the school didn't listen to it? They were given to the school. The school never rescinded him from being charged or involved. The case, it was dismissed, thrown out, no, nothing against him. It was over and done with. And her statement to me was, I could not believe that I had to come to court and no, there was no court case written on there. I said, that's because the schools try to hide or minimize the criminal activities that are within the school. So they don't like people to know what's going on. Otherwise, it falls under that unsafe school choice or unsafe school statistics where they have to file it. It goes on the database. It's uploaded to the state. And parents can move their kids based on some of the crimes that occur within school under No Child Left Behind, unsafe school choice status. She was like, wow. Okay. So make sure your child can be falsely accused and you want to get the statements while people are talking, just like in any other situation. You're listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin, and we're opening our vault. And I just want to discuss a few more cases before we end today's show. I know we are approaching the 45-minute mark. We try to keep shows under 30 minutes, but this is very important. So we're just going to continue right through. We're going to talk about Fir Park case that came out of Arkansas. Parent contacted me. Charter school in Arkansas, mother and father divorce. Kids go back and forth between the mother and the father. Divorce records show. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Send me the divorce records on this one. Look at the divorce records. The divorce records show that the mother is supposed to have access, non-custodial parents supposed to have access to the child's records. Charter school did not want to give the parents the records. The father told them not to. We came in, wrote a Fir Park letter, and we said no on the Fir Park, which is a federal statute, that the mother is entitled to the records. And for obvious reasons, in this particular case, the non-custodial parent had the children during the summer. And she was asking me, what about their educational positioning? And I said, well, we need the records to see what type of, if they are behind. The way we approached this case was I actually called the father. I said, look, my name is Phyllis Austin. The National Parent Education Center, we make sure children are receiving the highest level quality education. And this matter, the children will be coming up, and we need to make sure if there are any additional educational things that the child needs. We do need the records. Okay, they are arguing. Let's try to be diplomatic about this. You know, I didn't say that to him, but that's what I'm thinking. I flat out no. We used FERPAR, went to the state, got the records. No other problem. The school was holding off, boy. They were really holding off in that case. They were trying to be on the side of the father. The father, like, don't release any records to that, to the mother. But, you know, once the state comes in, sides with us, and basically say your certificate is on the line, it's amazing how many records you can get. Two private school cases I want to talk about. First one being a Montessori case. That private school kind of works on contracts. Well, the parent called us for whatever reason. You want to move the child to a public school within the school district out of Montessori. We looked at the data. We asked for normal reference test scores. The school gave Montessori students the Stanford 9, Stanford 10. Based on that, the child was behind. Was behind. The child wasn't up to grade level, and the numbers were behind the level, the skill level that were reflected on the school's ITBS scores. So we told the parent, look, your child basically has to go to that school. They can't, their educational needs will be met at that school according to the data in front of us. Normal reference test scores. She wanted the child to go to another school. And I said, no. I said, now they can give another test, see if they can give another test, and let's see where the child scores. The parent went to the Montessori school. The Montessori school said that the child is on level. And I told the parent, that's what they should have told you. Okay? But the child isn't. Okay? So that was the case. You know, you don't want parents believing just because they're in a private school. Private school means one thing. They don't receive federal funding. That's it. That's all it means. Doesn't mean that they're good schools. Just means they don't receive federal funding. Okay, that's what makes them private. So just don't assume that because they're private, they're a high quality level education, and that you don't need to monitor if the school has met your child's educational needs. Another private school, man, out of Chicago. Remember the case at Shoup Elementary School where now this child goes to high school, then the Catholic high school. The mother calls me and said the child fell at the end of the school year. Do you handle cases with private schools? I said, I never really thought about it, but most private schools operate the same with the fiduciary responsibility if they're good private schools. So the parent complaint was they didn't look at the IEP. My question, did you give them the IEP upon enrollment? She said yes. And because I was involved in that initial IEP, I kind of knew what was in there. I asked the parent what she wanted, and she knew that with us it's not about just a passing grade. It's about the child really learning. And her statement was, I don't want the child out of this school. The child needs to go to summer school. I was in agreement, yes, yes, yes. And she said, I want the school to pay for it. I said, okay. And this was new. I was like, they want the school to pay for it. So I contacted the school, told them that based on the information, they did not follow the IEP. And because they accepted the child with an IEP, it basically amounted to fraud. That they stated they was going to meet the child's educational needs, the parent pays tuition, the parent's the IEP is given, all that's documented, and no one goes by that child's IEP. And the lady stated, well, what do you want? Well, they can go to summer school. We said, yes, but we want you to pay for it. And the person on the other end of the phone said, wow, okay. She said, I'll get back in touch with you. Corresponded with the parent. I said, you know that you're going to have to really make sure that the child shows really an honesty in trying to learn. You know, no excuses, no empty rhetoric. And it was something about the Catholic schools, because at that time I really thought most Catholic schools were part of archdiocese. In this case, it was a part of a congregation. So I learned a lot here. Needless to say, they paid for summer school for this child. The child finished off in that school, finished the high school, finish your high school years and best school, and it was the best thing for the child. So, and now conference, the fourth prior to the child enrolling in summer school, the lady said, well, you know that we will be monitoring the situation very carefully. We already had that conversation with the parents, so that was a no-brainer. Okay, well, we're going to go to a very quick commercial break, and we're going to come back and talk about how we work with other organizations to resolve educational matters.
For Classroom DNA, show topics and information, text TNPEC.org to 23559. Again, for Classroom DNA, show topics and information, text TNPEC.org to 23559.
I see that some of you are listening via Facebook. I want to thank you. We have given you guys a lot of information. Working with other organizations, I want to just going to wrap up our last area. We'll talk about three cases. A custody case, this is divorce involved domestic violence. We were called in by another organization to help us in Douglas County, Georgia. And I think we were not privy to a lot of information. Matter of fact, I know that we were privy to a lot of information, especially when we brought the parents in to figure out what was going on and how to help the children. One child was adapting very well to the divorce, the divorce and the new environment. Another child wasn't having problems. It was showing up in discipline. But I will say this, both parents were heavily involved in the education of the children. And that was a beautiful thing that they could, on some level, work together. Because this was a divorce that was a marriage that had domestic violence, but the divorce, they were working together. Right into the case, we realized that the organization invited us in, what to me was more, I felt my intuition was saying that they were withholding information, and they were more or less siding with the mother. We were operating on the best interests of the children. Never give up your rights. That's probably why I don't live in the HOA. Live with HOAs. Never give up your rights. Never. Okay? Hold on to your rights. Don't give in. Don't give up your rights until we figure out this way. Going into that case, we got a lot of stuff done early on. We kind of reset the start button, got the school to work with us, told them we'll be working with the parents. They had to buy the book. Both parents had to buy the book to learn about multiple intelligence, learning styles, communications, creating a positive environment for the children to learn in at home and at school. But what we found out was there were a lot of environments that these children had to adjust to, from the school environment to the babysitter who picked them up, to going on to the babysitter's house, to the mother's environment, and then they had to go to the father's environment and the mother of the father environment when the father wasn't at home. That was just a lot of environments for a child to adjust to. One was doing fine, the other one wasn't. The mother was very good trying to get disciplined. We implemented a reward system. We got the kids onto the behavior modification plan for this child involved a reward system with the school. The school did send the child to an alternative. The mother was somewhat in favor. We were totally against it. And I think when we came in, the child was at the alternative school setting or on their way. We kind of stopped that. And we wanted to go heavily with the behavior modification plan. That's when the rift occurred. We weren't giving up any rights. You're not sending this kid to an alternative school. We're going to go full force tier 2 behavior modification, and you're going to be responsible for working with the family, all the environments together on behavior modification. Whereas the other organization wanted to take a different route to put the child in an alternative school to kind of just end the madness, and that's when we kind of parted. But we really did a good job of getting that behavior modification plan implemented. Another case, early on, Fulton County, special needs case, fetal alcohol syndrome. I actually met this pair in gymnastics class for the children. Her child and my child, they were both taking gymnastics, and she was reading this book on parenting. And I approached her with the confidence, and I said, you know, my book is better than that. I said, my book is better than that. I went out to the car, got my book, brought it in. She bought it a week. The next time we were at gymnastics, she told us about what was going on. And she said she was working with an organization. I said, I'm familiar with that organization. Do not tell them that you're working with us because of budget concerns. Some organizations will not work for you if you're working with another organization. So she continued, and this was early on in our life, in our developmental stage of the organization. We didn't even have a website back then. We didn't get a website until 2004. So, to make a long story short, we fed her the information that she needed. She would call us, and she said, Ms. Austin, the information that you gave us was great. The other organization didn't quite know how she was getting this our information. So our information is more, we don't mitigate or mediate just mediocrity. We go for the highest level of quality education. The other organization was more like a mediator. Well, how can we resolve the issue? We were in the best interest. We're going for the jaguar. We want the highest level of quality education. The parent thanked us, and I remember one phone call from the parent as she was getting things resolved. Needless to say, I wanted to shout out to school. I didn't want to go through all of this because it was obvious that the teacher in the school was inexperienced in, you know, implementing the IEP. The parent, these were grandparents. These were grandparents. They weren't parents. These were grandparents who were taking care of the children. The grandparents said, well, we don't have, you know, the resources to have the child go to a school outside the area. I said, fine, we'll work with you. When the grandmother called and said, Ms. Austin, they said, we don't know what information they're getting, but they're getting very good information. That was a great day. The child's needs were met. The last case came out of South Carolina, heartbreaking case. Organization came in from Augusta, Georgia. 9 or 10 year old expelled from school. They went to an organization in Augusta, Georgia. The lady looked at the case at the tribunal, had no idea what to do with it. Called a friend, called someone who happened to be a mutual friend of mine, actually Rich Thompson. He's been on the show before. Contacted Rich Thompson, asked, did he know someone, and he gave them our information. We asked first, was there any type of special issues going on? She said the child had been diagnosed. She told the school. Once you tell the school's supposed to do the testing. The school didn't. Child on expulsion. We get all the data. We actually asked the parent for even more data, going to the doctor and giving us that information. Within 4 days, we were able to write a letter. The parents said, what do you think will happen? I said, well, they're going to look at our website and realize that we're serious. We sent the letter up with our resolution, or the start of a resolution, which was IEP testing. About 1 p.m., I got a phone call. The child was back in school, although they weren't in a regular school. They were back in a school, and IEP testing would start. The organization we were working with, they were just ecstatic. They learned a lot on how to write letters out of Augusta, Georgia. If you call me, I give you the name because I don't have the name of the person with me at this time. But they were truly ecstatic. Our part was done once you got the IEP in place, and then we sent it back to their organization to make sure the IEP is being implemented and follow. There are so many other cases that I could talk about, just numerous ones that come in, and all of them get the same treatment. We always do what's in the best interest of the child to make sure the child's educational needs are met at the highest level of quality education. Wow. You have been listening to Classroom DNA with Phyllis Austin. I thank you for your time. I honor and welcome, and thank you for your presence. You have a great, fantastic day, and we will be back here next week. Have a fantastic week. And as always, we are ending with, you are a winner by Earth, Wind & Fire.